I'm Brendan McGee, and you're listening to Revisitation, a creative nonfiction program exploring the relationship between motion and self-discovery. On June 19th, 2013, David Hashey made national headlines washing ashore near Majorville, New Brunswick, after a days-long river cruise on a dock he'd stolen from the Fredericton Rowing Club. Over the last several years, I've interviewed a dozen people trying to make sense of this local news sensation, all while searching for the man himself. Every song you'll hear is tied to our story's setting, the Wolastoq River, often called by its settler name, the St. John. You'll find more information about the podcast, as well as links to stream and purchase these songs at revisitationpodcast.wordpress.com. Saturday, 15th June into Sunday, 16th June, 2013. Small Craft Aquatic Center, Fredericton. The man left under cover of darkness, disappearing down a short slope obscured by the shoreline's edge, seemingly veering into earth, were anyone watching. Against droning, burbling water, the tension of his frame on that narrow, crushed rock pathway should barely have registered. Or did he give himself away in merriment, homing in on a means of escape? The moments that followed aren't at issue, at least not as far as the law is concerned. David Murray Hashey, at age 65 and cloaked in balmy night air, had absconded with a 9-foot floating dock owned by the Fredericton Rowing Club. Comprised of light gray modular cubes held together like puzzle pieces, this dock was a stopgap for launching boats in the high water levels which bookended the club's rowing season. Freeing it from a concealed bluff below the seasonal kayak rental shop and winding municipal trail, he'd set off. While Hashey's time between land and water was of no concern to the letter of law, in my mind, everything hinges on it. Was this merely a crime born equally of opportunity and intoxication? Perhaps boredom? Did he take a running start into the Wolastoq River, hooping along to the clatter and clang of his own shallow waves, or was it a calculated descent? Moorings patiently untangled from a tree on shore, his eyes quietly fixed on the vessel. Was this a baptism, a theft, mystery, or misunderstanding? Those questions and more washed ashore. 4 days later, 13 kilometers downriver in the small suburban community of Lincoln, New Brunswick. It was June 2013. With things moving at a slow summer's pace in Canada's ninth largest province, this inscrutable heist supplanted the typical front page fodder, replacing photos of children splashing around the community pool on Woodstock Road or a soccer tournament at Nashwauksis Middle School. And, as if there wasn't already sufficient intrigue preceding him, Hashey arrived at arraignment, resigned in his ungovernable fate to top it. Now, with any good mystery, our brains act as turning tools upon the clay of the unknown. Still, none could have rendered his white woolly beard tacked up on rosy cheeks, that braced grin, his eyes still beaming from their trip to the lunatic fringe. Striking as his features, I remember, was how he used them to affect his words with a sort of moral conviction. Though long since removed from the global news coverage of his arraignment, my brain can still conjure video footage of David Hashey as he's escorted by sheriff's deputies towards the provincial courthouse intake door. What he may have been asked escapes me, but I've never shaken how that question seemed to course through him electrically. On a sudden lit up, Hashey turned to offer parking lot testimony. I was 3 days out there by myself. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. Eyes twinkling with mercy, his hands folded into one another. Just like a man-child. It's in the scriptures. The Bible. Equal parts improv and manifesto, all wilder than hell. It was great. The sermon shakes his sunburnt frame and his pants fall to the ground in perfect slapstick timing. "I'd love to talk to you," he says, unfazed as the sheriff's patience finally wanes and he's led into the Fredericton courthouse. Indoors, we'll learn that he left with nothing in particular. A case of beer, a bag of cannabis, no food to speak of, that he'd hoped to float to St. John, well over 100 kilometers downriver. These rambling claims, married to that week of speculative suspense, were written into the driest months of the year. The dock heist sparked kindling from pages of the Irving family's media monopoly in New Brunswick, flowing through the region one lunchroom chat or radio announcer punchline at a time. Allusions to Twain abounded, as did the pithy and the punny. He summoned a morbid curiosity akin to Alden Nolan's titular bull moose come down from the purple mist of trees on the mountain. And then, much like that night of June 15th, he disappeared. Revisitation will return after this.
Never touch.
Hailing from Fredericton, that's Motherhood with their song, River. February 2019. Halifax, Nova Scotia. Home. On the other side of season one of this program, which seeks to examine the relationship between motion and self-discovery, it seemed imperative to me that I look into this beacon of that relationship in my own life. During a break from contract work in February 2019, I set about auditing the public record of Mr. Hashi's adventure. More than 6 years on, a significant amount of coverage had disappeared, lost to broken links or defunct web pages. Even boilerplate details now seemed difficult to come by. That in the intervening years sometimes made me worry that I'd overstated the adventure in a way, that perhaps it now owed something to imagination. That said, the Forensic Files fanatic within me remained undeterred, and between February and March, I gleaned the following. 1. The doc was taken sometime between the late evening of Saturday, June 15th and the early morning of Sunday, June 16th. Fredericton Rowing Club personnel discovered a turned-over shopping cart and some beer cans littered nearby. Weeks prior, a vessel stored outdoors had gone missing, inflaming suspicions about what might have been a serial offender. 2. The modular cubes that made up the 9-meter-long dock were reported to cost about $100 each, meaning the entire thing cost in excess of $7,000. It had been secured to a tree on shore, as well as by roughly 6 cinder blocks chained to its bottom, like anchors. 3. Particular interest was paid to the approaching Canada Games in Sherbrooke, Quebec, as well as prior issues the club had faced with needles and broken glass in the water. 4. One David Murray Hashi was discovered in possession of the dock on Wednesday, June 19th, roughly 13 kilometers downriver on the shore of the Wolastoq River in Lincoln. It took Fredericton police 4 hours to tow the dock upriver back to the club. 5. Mr. Hashi hailed from London, Ontario. He was 65 years of age that June, meaning he would have been born in 1948. In addition to counts of theft and possession of cannabis, Hashi was charged with breaching a court order that confined him to his native London, some 1,500 kilometers southwest on the Trans-Canada. He was arraigned on Thursday, June 20th. Christopher Levine prosecuted for the Crown. The more details obtained, the more questions they bred. Questions about the man. Questions about the act and what it meant to the man. In service of self, perhaps, I wanted to ask for his answers as much as to recognize the impact he'd had on our sleepy city and on the imaginations of myself and some of my closest friends. As I began to reap what small and scattered bits of information remained, it seemed the logical first step was to speak with those people who'd initially planted the seeds. Shane Fowler is a Fredericton-based journalist who's worked with the city's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation Bureau since 2013. In fact, his piece from June 18th of that year contains some of the last remaining video coverage of the story.
Shane Fowler, CBC.
Hey Shane, this is Brendan calling. How are you doing?
Good, how have you been?
Not too bad at all.
Shane and I met while working together at a commercial radio station in Fredericton about 10 years ago. I called him up to see what he remembered of this case.
I started my internship at CBC that summer, so I was pretty green. And when you're an intern, you basically comb social media to kind of find your pitch. And I remember finding it that, you know, there was a bit of an outrage that that people had lost their dock down at the Fredericton Rowing Club. So, you know, you pitch that, and then they go, okay, 100%, that's news, and off you go. So that's certainly how I first got into the story.
Okay, now you reported on the dock, certainly itself. Do you remember the first time you would have heard of David Hashi or sort of seen him or become aware of him?
Yeah, we got a call back from one of the guys at the Fredericton Rowing Club saying, listen, the police got him, we found our dock, you can kind of close the loop on this story. But when I kind of asked what happened, they're like, it was just some guy. They found him a whole 13 clicks down the river, and he was headed for St. John, and that's all it was.
Emily Baron Cadloff was a reporter at Global News' Fredericton Bureau in 2013. At that time, your typical news day would begin with a pitch meeting over the telephone with Global's main office in Halifax.
I don't remember exactly how we found out about Dehlehashi originally. I would guess that we found out because police made an announcement that they had made an arrest. It may have even been because he was spotted a ways down the St. John River. He did make it a fair way using this dock as a raft. I mean, that was his goal, was to use this piece of floating dock as a raft and to sail it down the river. That's what he told me he wanted to do with it. And so he did make it a decent ways away, and he was spotted. And the first time I met him was outside of the courthouse in Fredericton.
What do you remember from that encounter?
Oh, boy. Firstly, Dehlehashi was such a character. He was charming. He was delightful. There are times when part of my job is to go and stand outside of the courthouse and wait for the police officers to bring the prisoner to the door. You will get about 15 seconds from when they open the sheriff's van to when they walk the prisoner inside. And you want to use those 15 seconds to see if the prisoner, the accused, has anything to say. And sometimes those encounters are really scary, and sometimes they're really boring. And like I said, it's not necessarily my favorite part of the job, but it's part of it.
You always go for the perp walk, which is that couple of seconds between when the police show up with their paddy wagon and take them to court.
But the sheriff's van rolled up, and they open the door. These two officers open the door, and they bring Mr. Hashi out, and his hands are bound in front of him, and he's wearing a T-shirt and these sort of overly baggy jeans. And as he gets out of the car, his pants actually fall down. I think likely what happened is when he was taken into custody, they probably took his belt and his shoelaces. That's customary.
He did lose his pants, and a lot of people were looking away when that happened. It was unfortunate. We never ran that because that's just that you know there's some mental health issues there as well, and somebody's not they're not being in their best mind.
And he was kind of standing there, and rather than be angry or kind of embarrassed or lash out, he very simply looked at one of the police officers and he kind of laughed and he said, "Hey, can you get those?" and the police officers said, "Oh, of course, sir," because he was standing, just in some underwear and his T-shirt.
And he's just this regular looking fella. You could tell he was a wanderer, and he basically just said he, on his way in, he said there was no radio, there was no TV, it was just peaceful.
You know, normally you have those 15 seconds, but because the officers had to help him with his pants, it felt like we had an eternity with him outside, and in reality it was probably a minute, maybe. So I said, "Mr. Hashi, how are you doing today?" And he said, I'm wonderful. I'm just great. And then he started talking kind of unprompted about his journey on the raft. He kept telling me that he felt like the baby Jesus in the scriptures, I believe were the words that he used. He told me that he felt calm and he felt peaceful out on the water. And he referenced the Bible a lot, like he wanted to be like the baby Moses in the scriptures. That was his goal. And that he enjoyed himself, that he had a really good time when he was on the river. He had no worries. He had nobody that he had to deal with. That was his goal.
Now, would it be fair to say he wasn't the culprit you were expecting at the outset?
Not at all. We, to be honest, I don't know what we were expecting, but he was unlike any other accused person I had ever encountered outside of a courtroom before or since.
I know, like, a Huck Finn comparison was made several times.
So Mr. Hashi used the word man-child. I felt like a man-child. And when Kevin and I were interviewing him outside of the courthouse, his hair was kind of wild. He had this beard. But I remember most that he had this really big smile on his face. He smiled the whole time. He was in genuinely good spirits. You kind of had this feeling of, like, maybe this crime wasn't all bad.
Sure.
Somebody had a good time.
I've still heard jokes about this, like, 4 or 5 years later, people being like, whatever happened to that fella who stole the dock? Like, how far do you think he would have made it to St. John by now if he kept around through, sort of deal? So it really did pick up. A lot of people had a lot of interest in it, and it ended, you know, unfortunately, the guy had a record and did have to go to court and was sentenced for it and, you know, got in trouble for it. But other than that, it was a pretty whimsical story.
Speaking with these folks who work as archivists of local culture enlivened my memories of Hashi, made them feel no longer insular, but more a shared experience. They'd also provided a solution to my first big hurdle, which was simply the question, is this really happening? The natural follow-up, of course, is why. Put more eloquently, perhaps, what is the human interest in a man stealing a dock?
Partly, I think it was a slower time. So if I remember correctly, government wasn't sitting. And there weren't other big things that it was kind of competing with. So that would certainly be part of it. I think there's also something very whimsical about this crime. Firstly, no one was hurt. The monetary value of the theft was relatively small. Certainly, it was a big monetary value for the rowing club, and they didn't want to lose their dock because they had to fundraise for it the summer before. So I'm not downplaying that. But in, you know, this, we're not talking about grand larceny. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it seemed almost quaint.
You know what? It's still there. Like, that dock that was the center of all this, you know, hubbub a couple of years ago, you can go down there and walk on it every summer. It's still there. Everything's got a story, right? So that one's just a little more published than the rest.
There's a bit of an escapism. Like, you know, it's kind of a fun and funny crime to put yourself in the middle of and to kind of imagine, oh, I wonder, you know, what that would be like. I don't think many people think that when we report on robberies or violent crimes, but this one was just kind of whimsical.
Revisitation will return after this.
Check your watch, you're 14 and more. Here lies a road not traveled before. Down in the cellar, there's beer on your breath. And up off the floor, did you let him explore? Oh, 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 oh. Check your map, your loop. Money's all spent, and out in the field, your fate has been sealed. Oh, oh, oh. I'm the king of the past, and still I walk forward. Won't close my eyes to the passing of time. Cause you've lost your watch. It's buried under snow. Its time does not stop. Find your way homeward. The rivers are freezing, and under the ice, the borders are changing.
King of the Pass, that's a band called the Rheostatics, name-dropping the river bordering Fredericton's north side. Despite this affirmation of what his adventure meant to people who still talk about it 6 years later, what it meant to the man himself remained a mystery. And so, to learn more about Mr. Hashey's recent past, I hearken back to his beginnings. Well, we know he hailed from London, Ontario. Vital statistics from that province's archives are unfortunately only available for births prior to 1918. For all those that come after, one is redirected to redacted records held by Service Ontario. Ancestry.ca was a bust too, and outside of what 2013 coverage I'd already gleaned, could find no mention of him using FP Infomart's Archive of Canadian Newspapers. As much as I tried not to reduce Hashey to his adventure, with the past closed off and few options left at my disposal, I dug deeper into the legal record of it, hoping that it might lead me to his life outside that moment in time. Cobbling together the endangered memories of my criminology minor, I searched all variations of Hashey's name on the Canadian Legal Information Institute's canlee.org. Nothing. An internet search of publicly available online court records from Ontario yielded the same. And so, now several months after initially pulling those news clippings, I was forced to take a moment's pause until the holiday season brought me back home to Fredericton. It's mid-afternoon on Christmas Eve Eve as I walk through the main doors of the provincial courthouse, passing through marble columns and under gilded arches. Neatly pressed is the brand new $10 bill I have to cover the cost of viewing Mr. Hashey's file. While New Brunswick's civil cases are searchable remotely, criminal files for this courthouse can only be accessed on-site, for a small fee. Pausing just before the metal detectors, I awkwardly leave my bag, replete with Christmas baking for later deliveries, at the front desk with security. At room 207, the youngish court clerk greets me from behind protective glass and I offer up some keywords for a search. He moves to a computer at the back. It's too far away, but we volley back and forth in raised voices. Despite providing Mr. Hashi's name, birth year, and court date, the clerk comes up empty. I ask if there's anything else he can do, to which I'm advised to call an older female clerk in Woodstock, who has been on the job for at least a couple of minutes and who might possibly know a trick to scare up the file. To be clear, no name was provided with this suggestion. I retrieve my bag from security and find that, unlike the record of Mr. Hashi, no peanut butter balls or Rocky Road squares have gone missing. Well, that's about it for this episode of Revisitation. Throughout the series, we'll be sharing songs and artists that are invariably tied to the Wolastoq River, sometimes called by its settler name, the St. John River. You can find a full list and links to purchase their music at our site, revisitationpodcast.wordpress.com. In part, we're doing this because the river is a character in this story, and an understated player in the stories of most of us settler peoples who live and gather along its shores. Moreover, though, it's important for me to recognize that the land on which our story unfolds is the traditional unceded territory of the Wolastoq Wayug people. Mentioning this land acknowledgement is a way for us to think about where we live, how it was developed, and what impacts this had on everyone involved. In that spirit, here is Wolastoq Wayug artist Jeremy Dutcher with Agwidin, or Canoe Song, from his landmark album Wolastoq Wayug Lintawaganawa.
Dutch one, get a whistling.
This has been Revisitation. In today's episode, you heard music from Property, Motherhood, The Rayostatics, Jeremy Dutcher, Cedric Noel, Sam Arnold, and Brookside Mall. All of that music is tied to our story's setting, the Wolastoq River, often called by its settler name, the St. John. Revisitation was written and produced by me, Brendan McGee, with editing help from Dylan Ward, and thanks to Kyle Forbes, whose ancient PC this was made on. You can find full episodes, more info about the podcast, as well as links to stream and purchase these songs at revisitationpodcast.wordpress.com.